It is Friday again, so let me say thank you to all of you who are supporting Into the Word financially. We cannot stay on this radio program without that sort of assistance, so thank you very much. Anyone that would like to help in that area, it's easy enough to do. All you do is write down the contact information you'll hear at the end of today's program. Then you can send your one-time or ongoing gift of any amount to that address, and it will be used for the radio broadcast fees. Fridays, I try to remember every time to challenge you to be an active participant in body life in a local congregation of the Lord. Everybody needs all your other brothers and sisters in a local area. You need to be able to worship together and fellowship together and pray and sing and praise and encourage and serve. All of us need that sort of thing. Even if you're stuck at home, you need to have some place that checks up on you and knows about you and prays for you, that considers you part of their family. So if you do not have a church home like that, you need to put in the effort and find a place that you can call home. If you happen to be within driving distance of the Elkhart East building, I extend, as I always do, an invitation to come, check us out. Maybe we can be your local church family. We're in Genesis chapter 7. We have just started talking about the actual flood itself. And it is the oldest story that has dates attached to it. And I'm going to try to unravel some of my confusion that I probably caused last episode, in that Moses and the Jewish people have been given a brand new spring start calendar in their life as Israelis coming out of Egypt in the spring. But before that, most of the groups used a fall started calendar, probably because that's when the agricultural calendar starts. It's actually going to be when the flood finishes as well in the fall, so that you can plant and start getting the agricultural cycle started fresh again. And so when we read these dates in the book of Genesis, you should take them, I believe, from a fall start calendar, so that we have the flood starting in the fall and finishing in the fall as well, by the way. Basically about a year that they will be on the ark. The initial part of the flood was the waters under the tectonic plates, as we would say, the water that is below the bottom part of the ocean, which was much more shallow apparently to begin with. These waters were probably there for some sort of structural component of planet Earth itself, maybe lubricants, some people have suggested. But in the flood, cracks apparently occur in the supercontinent and apparently down in the bottom of the ocean. And the waters beneath the land and beneath the floor of the ocean, being under pressure, they come through these cracks, through these fractures at a high velocity. And they come out as eroding streams. And as they erode, they take lots of particulate matter up with them into the vapor canopy that is above. Now, what I'm describing here is something that you will see in the mechanisms described by many creationists, Answers in Genesis People or Institute for Creation Research. And so this is the fountains of the great deep breaking up. Now, all of that matter that's being eroded, plus the high velocity, probably some of it turned to steam, water, going up high into the vapor canopy, it changes the balance. And the water vapor that has been suspended perfectly up in the sky for over 2 millennia, according to the Septuagint dating system, it now starts condensing around little pieces of soil, and it gets heavy enough that it starts to drop as precipitation, which had never happened before, apparently. So we've got water spreading out from below, and we've got water collapsing from on high, and this happens for a 40-day period. So we know there is a lot of water moisture up in the atmosphere, apparently, that is being precipitated. And there's apparently a lot of water in the wet reservoirs of the deep that are coming up. And this water is what spreads across the supercontinent to a pretty good depth and wipes everything out. It is like God's washing machine. And this is the agitation cycle at the very beginning to make sure that everything breaks loose from the planet's surface that needs to be cleaned up. Now, there's a lot of other things we could talk about in the fossil record that indicates just how catastrophic this event was. We find animals in the fossil record that apparently were just completely covered in an instant by soil and crushed. We see bones, multiple bones, broken and disarticulated, where apparently they got caught up in some sort of great turmoil of flood water that broke them into bits and pieces, and then they were covered. We find sea creatures on high mountains, and the reason for that is because the sedimentation of the flood process gets laid down, and then those mountains are pushed upward in the flood processes, or toward the end of the flood process, whenever the continents start crashing against the opposite side of the world, the Pacific side of the world, because that's where we find all the high mountain ranges, is around the rim of the Pacific. And that's also where we find all the deep trenches around the rim of the Pacific, because basically plate tectonics, which is a science that most of us were taught in school, caused that, but it happened a lot faster than what some of our evolutionary textbooks tried to tell us. It didn't happen over hundreds of thousands or even millions of years. It happened in 1 year's time. The beginnings of the flood are probably the reason why we hear stories of large animals like woolly mammoths being flash frozen with buttercups, tropical material, in their mouths. Because this change in the perfected environment with the perfect temperature and the perfect humidity and all of that, it changed instantaneously. And so we have great amounts of high altitude cold air dropping because they're making up for the spouting of the water up on high. That cold air comes down and probably is the reason why we have those animals flash frozen. So all of that you will find in some of the materials put out by Answers in Genesis and Institute for Creation Research. Let me just read the text to you and make some application along the way as to some of those things. So verse 17, the flood continued 40 days on the earth. The waters increased and bore up the ark, and it rose high above the earth. So the ark is just a box. It was not intended to be a sailing vessel. It has no reason to be guided and navigated. All it needs is to survive the turmoil of a 40-day storm. Because once the 40-day storm is over, then things will calm down and be more peaceful. And this ark is the perfect shape for that. It is a very long, rectangled box. And so it will handle that sort of water agitation quite well. I remember watching a video once of somebody doing an experiment in a large tank. I think it belonged to the United States Navy, where they'd been testing models for future vessels. And somebody had put an ark model into this, and they were making monster waves, waves much bigger than what you would expect in a current world situation, and it never even came close to tipping over. It rode it quite well. And so the flood continued for 40 days, this active cycle, and the floodwaters just keep getting higher and higher and higher as the water from the sky and the water from under the earth keep feeding this flood. Now, what's going on inside the ark during this time? We don't know for sure, but I'm going to suggest to you the possibility that God may have put everyone into some sort of suspended animation during this time. We do know that many animals have the ability, even today, for when there is long periods of darkness in the world and a lowered temperature, to basically go into some sort of hibernation where their body temperature goes down, where their body functions go down, their heart rate, their breathing, all of that goes down. So they use less energy that's stored up in their body during that period of time. We know that people who have fallen into cold water have survived much longer because their body goes into some sort of emergency status in order to maintain the brain the core organs. Now, is it possible then that during this early active time of the flood that God put everyone into that sort of situation so that they would not have to deal with some of the most jostling moments of the ark? Don't know for sure, but I wonder if it is possible that that is the case. But verse 18 says, "The waters prevailed and increased on the earth, and the ark floated on the face of the waters. And the waters prevailed so mightily on the earth that all the high mountains under the whole heaven were covered." Now today, we have some monstrously high mountains, and people mock the idea of the floodwaters being that high. And the response of those of us that are serious creationists are, well, those are not the mountains that this is talking about. The word mountains in Hebrew and in Greek is actually also the word that we use for hills. And so probably in the original creation, in the original supercontinent, the highest mountains were probably less than what we would say 2,000 feet above sea level. Those are nice, they're pretty, they're beautiful, but they are still quite useful for having trees and having productive plants, and you can even farm on the sides of the mountain pretty easily with terracing and things of that nature. So it seems as if before the flood, the supercontinent was intended to be completely arable. That is, completely useful for agricultural pursuits. So we don't have a problem with a tree line where nothing grows above a certain level. So all these high mountains that we're talking about here are quite low by our way of thinking of mountains. And so the water prevailed above those sorts of mountains. Think the Appalachians, think the Smokies, think the Ozarks. The waters prevailed above those type of mountains, covering them 15 cubits deep. Now that's about 20.7 inches to the cubit. So we're easily talking almost 30 feet, 26 or something like that. I didn't have my list here of conversion for the long cubit here. Now, how do we know? Was Noah taking soundings? Maybe. We don't know. It's possible he could have taken some soundings, but it's much more likely that God just simply told him that in this process, this is going to be a lot deeper than anyone can survive. Even going to a high mountain is not going to save you because the water is going to be much higher than your head above that mountain. Verse 21, all flesh, that's the point, isn't it? Verse 21, all flesh died that moved on the earth. Birds, livestock, beasts, all swarming creatures that swarm on the earth, and all mankind. Everything on the dry land in whose nostrils was the breath of life died. So every living creature that breathes that wasn't in the ark didn't make it. And it's because of sin. It's because of the meddling that the fallen angels, at least a select few of them, were doing against humanity, possibly even against the animals that were created for humanity. And so God blotted out every living thing that was on the face of the ground, man and animals, creeping things and birds of the heavens. They were blotted out from the earth. Only Noah was left and those who were with him in the ark. So we have, in the active cycle of the flood, the first 40 days, the cleaning of planet Earth. Everything was gone by God's activity during that first 40 days, including all of the buildings that might have been built. Some people have wondered, well, where's all of the evidence of the pre-flood civilization? Gone. Some people have suggested it's possible that the pyramids are pre-flood. I don't think so. There's good evidence that they were built during historical time. So God wipes out the pre-flood civilization, all evidence of it, and the sin that went along with it. So 40 days for the active cycle. And then we are told that the waters prevailed on the earth 150 days. Now, when it says prevailed 150 days, it means that the 151st day is the day that the ark touches some underwater still ground. It will touch, it'll grind, they'll be able to hear it, against the top of the mountains of Ararat. We'll see that here in just a moment. So 150 total days of nothing but water everywhere around the ark. And then we start the process of recovery. We're now ready to drain all that water away. And how does that water drain away? Well, it would appear that God, in the shifting around of the different pieces of the supercontinent, we're talking about the plate tectonics now, North and South America are sliding westward, Asia and Africa are sliding eastward, And so there is a big section between them that starts opening up as the new seabed between these two continents. And the seabed seems to be much deeper than the original seabed. What do I mean by that? Well, there's a big drop-off at the continental shelf. And so that might represent where those continents used to be actually attached. And so we've got a big seabed that's opening on between the old and the new world, as we perceive it. But on the other side of the planet, those plates are slamming into each other. The Indian subcontinent plate is sliding northward from where it used to be attached down on the south part of Africa plate. And it comes up and it slams into the Asia plate. And that's where the Himalayas come from. It's because when they come together, think about two pieces of paper being jammed against each other. If you keep pushing, then the paper has to go either up or down. And so we have the Himalayas are pushed up because of those plates coming together. We've also got the deep trenches, the Mariana Trench, are bending downward. We've got the place where all the water used to be under the earth, where the water used to be under the ancient seabed. That's collapsed down now. So we've got deeper seabeds, and we've got higher mountains that are shoving up, and some of the land around those mountains are going up a little bit with it. So we have some plateauing and steps going up to those higher mountains. And so in that process, the water drains off into the seabeds gradually. Now, some of it will get trapped here and there, and we'll end up with some runoffs like what happens along the Colorado River, which digs the Grand Canyon in the sedimentary layers of the flood. Because remember, while the flood was going on, all of the material that had been dug up and was suspended in the floodwaters during the active phase of the flood, once things calm down, all of those sediments start depositing one on top of the other. It's a sorting process. And this is where we have the animal bodies and animal parts, and all of these things get buried in these various sediments, and then those sediments begin to compress, and eventually, once the water is out of the picture, they begin to solidify. But in the runoff areas, like I was saying, the Grand Canyon, we get some spectacular cutting away. And other places around the world, we've got similar things like that. Go to the different sites that deal with flood dynamics, like Answers in Genesis and Institute for Creation Research, and they will be more than happy to show you all sorts of things that describe how the flood changed the world the way that it looked. But as it drains off gradually. And so chapter 8 says, God remembered Noah and all the beasts and all the livestock that were with him in the ark, and God made a wind blow over the earth, and the waters subsided. So now we're going to start seeing planet Earth try to find its new equilibrium. So we're going to have the different wind systems that set up high and low in the atmosphere. We'll end up with the currents being set up in the different oceans as they start to appear. All of this is part of the new equilibrium of planet Earth. By the way, the ice ages probably all happened very rapidly as the flood was closing up and planet Earth was trying to find its new equilibrium. A lot of snow, a lot of ice form, a lot of ice sheets moving and grinding and retreating and all of that during this unstable period. But in the early part, you know, the late part of the flood, the early part of the new Earth, we've got the waters gradually finding their level. because water always finds its level. And so verse 2, little reminder that after the 40 days and nights, the fountains of the deep and the windows of the heaven were closed. The rain from the heavens was restrained. So all of that is finished way early. The waters receded from the earth. At the end of 150 days, the waters had abated. So they had they'd reached their peak, and now, because of the action of the plates sliding around and trenches and ocean beds being reformed and mountains pushing up, we're now draining all of that water off. And so verse number 4 says, in the seventh month, on the 17th day of the month, the ark came to rest on the mountains of Ararat. Now, in the Septuagint, it says the 27th day, just so you're aware of that. So this is when probably they heard the sound of the bottom of the big box they're in touching something. And so that's the very top of the new mountain Ararat, which is it is a mountain caused by volcanic action, but apparently it was volcanic action that happened after the settlement of some of the sedimentary layers that already happened on the bottom of this area, and it starts pushing up all of that material, and so the ark grinds against the top of it. And verse 5, the waters continue to abate until the 10th month of the first day of the month, and the tops of the mountains were seen. And at the end of 40 more days, Noah opened the window of the ark that he'd made, and he sent forth a raven. And so when we come back next session, next week, we're going to talk now about Noah and his family getting ready to get into the new world.